the General Services Administration is reorganizing the Integrated Technology Service. That news coming after GSA's plans were announced to consolidate some of its largest professional services contracts, too. Larry Allen's president of Allen Federal Business Partners and publishes the Week Ahead newsletter. And he says all of this consolidation feels like deja vu all over again. You sound like, from what I read in the newsletter this week, like you've seen this before, Larry.
Well, we have seen this before, Francis. We've seen it. We're trying to work specifically in what used to be the Federal Technology Service, which is an approximation of what ITS is today. And it gets to the historic tension inside GSA, not just in this part, but throughout the agency, between the central office and the regional offices, and exactly who gets to do what and who runs what function. And the current bidding is to try to strengthen the central office function in the Washington office, and you know, that's been tried before, and the regions have had ways to push back and kind of wondering if that won't happen again.
What drives that tension that you mentioned, Larry?
Well, I think part of it is that, you know, it's the central office in the eyes of the region, Francis. They think the central office knows best, and the central office is in Washington, and they think they know everything because they're in Washington, and where the regional offices argument is that they're closer to individual customers, they are the ones that are in the field, they are in the same communities that GSA's customer agencies live in, and they should be better suited to make the decisions on what's going on in their own part of the country.
You write in the newsletter, the most recent centralization foray is certainly not the first attempt of its kind in GSA. You reference the FTS effort in the late 90s. What happened then? What did they do? And in your view, why didn't it work?
Well, what they did, Francis, is they brought everybody from the Federal Technology Service together in, I believe, Chicago, and said, look, we're overlapping each other. We're not running efficiently. People are duplicating efforts. Other things that should be getting done aren't getting done. We're going to agree to play nicely together, and that everybody's going to have a clear vertical on what it is each region is going to do. One region, for example, would work with product-based IT. Keep in mind, this was the 90s. Another would do services IT. Another region would do something else, but they wouldn't poach business from each other's regions, and it would all be controlled by, at that time, the commissioner. Now it's an assistant commissioner. And it didn't work because each one of these regions had its own budget number that it had to meet, much like industry has budget numbers that it has to meet in order to be sustainable. And so the regional people said, well, we still need to go meet our numbers. And by the way, our regional administrators are politically appointed, and the commissioner is a careerist, and we're going to report to our politically appointed regional administrators and do our own thing. Thanks. And you know, that, I think, to a large extent, still exists today. Each region does have its own budget that it needs to meet. The central office has targets that it has to meet as well. So how you are going to get greater efficiency out of centralization, it certainly looks good on paper, but I'm not sure that it's achievable.
I also wonder, and I'm not picking on this particular model, I'm just kind of asking a more general question, is at least what I intend. I wonder, when you divide things up like that regionally, if you don't wind up alienating potentially your customer because they're used to dealing with one person for whatever whatever they need, and not going to this guy for this and this woman for that and this person for this other thing, especially when those people are not in their parts of the country.
Well, I think that's exactly right. If we're still a very relationship-driven business, even in government contracting, and the same goes for real estate. So if you're used to working with a specific person at GSA, and all of a sudden you're told that you have to change up that person, or that, you know, that one person is only going to be able to handle one-third of your needs, now you, the customer, have to make it your business to know how GSA is organized, and that's not a good business model.
Well, or you have to make it your business to figure out how somebody else is organized who's going to be able to do it for you in a way that suits you better.
Right.
Larry Allen is the president of Allen Federal Business Partners and writes the Week Ahead newsletter every week. You have another item in here about cyber intrusions, and we've heard about a bunch of them lately. We will continue to hear about them because the cyber experts tell me that there are two kinds of federal agencies, those who have been hacked and those who will be. And the bottom line here is what, Larry? What is the point that you're trying to make to your readers in industry about all of these cyber issues?
Well, the bottom line is that government cyber leaders want industry's help. I think there is a realization that a lot of the new breakthroughs in cybersecurity are driven in the commercial market. That's where a lot of the R&D is. There are businesses that have sound, important reasons to keep their proprietary information confidential. So government is looking outward to the commercial sector for those solutions, Francis, and realizing that while there are some good solutions that are going to be government-driven and government-specific, that they need to use the cutting-edge technologies in the commercial market more than try to grow their own.
You write, contractors are reluctant to offer some solutions because contracting officials and IGs demand 100% foolproof solutions. And you go on to state the obvious. That's a really unreasonable expectation for anybody to have about just about anything in technology, let alone something like cybersecurity, Larry.
Well, that's right. And this is part of it. It's not just limited to cyber, Francis. It goes to a lot of things in government contracting, which is regardless of where the problems develop, and often it's on both sides, both government and industry, it's usually the contractor that gets left holding the bag, the culpability bag. And as a result, you've got good technologies out in the commercial sector that the government can leverage, but there are companies that are very reluctant to offer them because they don't want to take on the liability risk. You know, they know their solutions are good, but there's no such thing as a foolproof solution. And also, if you look at a lot of the cyber reports, I'm sure you've seen the same ones I have. What's the number one cyber problem? People.
Mm-hmm.
And how those solutions are implemented. And when a contractor puts together its solution, it could be a very effective solution, but if it's not implemented or managed properly by people, regardless of whether those are government people or private sector people, things can go wrong. The difference is, in the government market, if things go wrong, suddenly the Inspector General gets involved, and the Department of Justice potentially gets involved because it's the government's money that was spent on some sort of imperfect solution. So there's understandably some reluctance on the part, unfortunately, of particularly cutting-edge contractors to get involved in the public market.
The silver lining, I guess, in that dark cloud, Larry, is that I'm starting to get a sense, at least, that some people understand 100% foolproof solution is unreasonable. It's not going to happen. And even people at the levels that you're talking about, COs and inspectors general, they're starting to get this. That's not reasonable. What's reasonable is looking at the way that this security is deployed and examining if there were improvements, obvious improvements that could have made that would have made a difference in a breach situation.
Well, I think that's right. There has to be that understanding. There has to be the understanding that we're working in a very agile, continuously developing marketplace in cybersecurity, and that as good as a solution might be today, you know, that's how hard the hackers are going to work later tonight, not even tomorrow, to breach that solution. So there has to be some understanding that everybody is working towards a common enemy, and that driving good solutions is the responsibility of both government and industry.
All right. One final item I wanted to ask you about in your newsletter this week, and you file it under Doing Business in the Environment You Have, Not the One You Want. You write, the author remembers the days when risk-taking and innovation dominated the government acquisition market. There was also a time when government budgets, while always finite, were a little bit less so than they are today. That's not the market, however, in which we currently work. Now, I read that, Larry, and I'm sorry, but I say, duh. You obviously felt it was necessary to point it out for some reason. What's the reason?
Well, you consistently see companies, Francis, that set double-digit growth numbers for themselves inside the federal sector, particularly looking in the IT market, which, you know, the federal IT market at best is a stagnant marketplace. So in order to achieve double-digit growth, you're either going to have to do an exceptionally good job at eating someone else's lunch, or you're going to have to get out the acquisition check and write some dollars for buying a company so that you can get that market share. It's not really realistic for every IT contractor around the Beltway to have a 20% or 15% growth expectation when they're selling into a flat to shrinking government marketplace. And so that's why I put that down, because despite the fact that it is a, as I call them, a Homer Simpson statement for you and I, there are a lot of business development executives out there that continue to set very high goals for their companies in terms of federal market growth.
And I will say that I have followed the last several years with great amusement the earnings projections that a lot of the public companies make when they do their earnings calls every quarter. And make statements like, we don't expect the slowdown in government contracting, blah, 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 to affect us to the degree that it will affect our competitors, yada, yada, yada. And I keep going, well, who's it going to affect? If it's not going to affect any, it's got to affect somebody. At some point in time, somebody has to eat it.
That's, you're exactly right. And, you know, we've seen a net exodus of government contractors from the space the last two fiscal years in a row. So those are the people that are eating it, but some of those are the exact same companies that had the double-digit expectations.